I'm Desmond Graham. I'm going to read some poems from A Book of Listening, my collection of 2021, published by Red Squirrel Press. In the poems, I take listening in a very broad sense. I start with some epigraphs, and they give an indication that what I'm going to be writing about involves actual listening, hearing, taking note, attending, but also in a broader sense to what is around us, to be aware, to be open. I'll start with just a one-line epigraph from Walter Benjamin. The person we look at, or who feels he is being looked at, looks at us in turn. And I'll start straight in with a poem called I Met Walter Benjamin. I met Walter Benjamin. I'd known him for years, but never bothered to ask or make an appointment. Now I've pasted him into my family group, like the Dutchman who ordered the artist to add to his family portrait the dead he still wanted, an uncle, a parent, a grandma, because he felt they were there, though long since departed. I have something like a Rembrandt sketch of his face, well, like a Rembrandt sketch of a type of a look, which I find familiar. Like a piece of sheet music, where you can't read a note, but you know how it sounds already. I know he was there on the streets, on that day, in that sunrise, just as the street lamps faded and guttered, and he went on his way, where the buildings have altered, the paving has changed, and the daylight I see is not his. I don't lean to the side in the hope that he's passing, or tilt the umbrella to share. He is there as a hum or a tune, a pattern you'll whistle in place, not knowing how closely it fits. Like finding you're whistling the Marseillaise after Paris was mentioned, or someone observing, though you had not known it, you had just hummed the Prisoner's March from Fidelio as you came upstairs from the cellar into the light. He is there like a source to a sort of quotation you were not aware you were making, but found when you met. Those places. There are those places which you come upon, stream or corner of the road, cistercians left, or some accumulation of willow, and the fall of light gives back you looking in. Or like a half-dark street you find, where Abelard walked down after an argument, and a wall of limestone worked by hand and adds 800 years before welcomes the angle of the sun and your first gaze. It's not as if you ever were before in such a place, but that it looks in all its silent unfamiliarity of gaze so quietly back. There are those places you set out to find with map in hand and book at home pored through, which are announced as centre-ville or hotel name, and as you take that road all road signs disappear and there is nothing there to recognise. or where the country lane, with its four fingers pointing to four different ways, each one a different name, withholds the one you're seeking, and the decorative roadside primroses, the massive bell flowers and bright young grass, are nowhere in particular, offer spring as anywhere after weeks of rain. Until a person comes from gate or front door, side road, back garden, and waves to turn right now into the drive and go no further. And always afterwards, you know each road name as you see it there, as if long nights were spent in taking it to heart. Like books shelved at home, you find at once your bearings. Whole streets of Paris, you've not walked along for years, await your coming back, with the odd entrance down a slope for cars, or the shop with bric-a-brac, though new named, to give you back your face in its reflection, peering in. And the rows of terraced dwellings, black on black, in the worst of weather, in a city you once knew, fill up the earth's four corners with their stories, which you added to, although a stranger, and no longer there. The last of the epigraphs is from Spinoza's Ethics. An intellect would be more imperfect if the mind alone existed and had cognizance of nothing outside itself. Thus there are many things outside ourselves that are useful to us and are therefore to be desired. Among these, none can be conceived more excellent than the things which are entirely accordant with our nature. If, for example, two individuals of precisely the same nature are united together, they compose a double individual, more powerful than the single. Thus, there is nothing more useful to human beings than human beings. Spinoza's desk. Spinoza's desk was shipped with his last writings in a barge to beat censor, would-be editor, and prying eye straight to the publisher. The desk itself passed on perhaps as shelving, firewood, or as some store place for a publisher's accounts. My father's desk, my one inheritance, I never did pick up, leaving it to auctioneer or neighbour or whoever happened to be there when they cleared up. I had no wish to lean my wrist and tilt my elbow where he did his writing, hours long, recording orders every night. My mother kept it for me out of kindness, knowing that I wrote. She could not know it would have struck me silent, thinking of the things he might have written there, had not his care for widowed mother, new war, new job, new pittance, changed his course as necessity blew in. What mattered of Spinoza's desk was lifted on the breeze of friends and bravery of publication, and still has force enough to make us stop to listen in his tracks. All that matters of my father's desk, I can seek within the freedom of some table covered in what winter light lets fall, or anything a train, a plane, a barroom even, tilts against your knees, to carry you as far as mind may choose, but never far enough away to lose my father, desk-bound every evening, elsewhere, as he wrote. The next poem has the title taken from a German word, Totschweigen. There are those who can talk any subject to death, too many to bother to remember the occasions. There are those dead tired from the talk of others, not listening to how they may be heard. And there is Totschweigen, as a German friend said, explaining, to silence something to death. So appropriate and so timely, having just read that passage in Jane Austen. Did you not hear me ask him about the slave trade last night? I did, and was in hopes the question would be followed up by others. And I longed to do it, but there was such a dead silence. The inner need to own a library. It's a quotation from Walter Benjamin's letters. The inner need to own a library. Like that man across the way who moved a few streets down to Little Room and found not the local library or the local seat of learning had a shred of interest in what he had loved and saved. And as my friend discarded, when he book by book thought of the needs of friends, and like a sportsman leaving the field of victory, through Borges, Flann O'Brien, and Carlos Castaneda, to bewildered onlookers, and went away. And another, choosing her last books, like a last supper, keeping Dostoevsky and a handful more for a round or two before time betrayed her. And that choice, a friend, a weatherman, took to the Antarctic, made by weight, like a monarch on his birthday, or his 10 pounds of flesh, his books for 8 months' winter. And at the end, the damage done, left snowshoes, penguins, and everyman's for a place to study, 3 years, and a card to spend long-earned summer days deep in the stacks, big-eyed, with a card catalogue, not knowing which to choose. And then, just yesterday, a phone call. How a son sold off by the kilo what a father lined his walls with over years. And the partner who was told, If you want mementos, they're with the dealer. Buy them. I'm going to end with a short poem. Near the end of my collection, which is simple, but brings together the themes or the focus of the whole book. It's called Paired Portraits. Another word for them is pendant portraits. Portraits of two people hung at a little distance, but roughly side by side, above a fireplace or whatever it would be. Paired Portraits. He is only saying what she will say when we move between them. They meet upon some high wire stretched between their eyes, which we may pass across but cannot halt on. We must take both in to see how each one looks, to see what they can see and what alone would be invisible to us.